topic of this evening's shiur is the halachos of a broken engagement. And you might find that as a strange topic, but unfortunately, it is a growing phenomenon. And I myself was involved in two of them recently, working out the details and being involved in the dine mamonos aspect. And I started to look into the issue because it was nogei lahalacha. And I was amazed to find that the Shulchan Aruch itself and the Rishonim have so much to say about this phenomenon, and they have so many details that they discuss. So I thought it would be an interesting issue to talk about, and it's something that I think is not often spoken about, but it is extremely relevant. So we begin with a fascinating tshuva in the Chasam Sofer, where the Chasam Sofer was sent a letter about a tremendous fight that broke out between two different communities, the community of Nicholsburg and the community of Liechtenstadt. I don't know much about these two communities at all, but they were both in Europe in the days of the Chasam Sofer. And basically what happened was Rab Mordechai Banet, who was one of the great Gedolim of the generation, happened to live his entire life in the city of Nicholsburg. And then he went on a trip somewhere, and he ends up in Liechtenstadt, and it just so happens to be he passed away in the place where he was visiting. And now the two communities started to fight where he should be buried. The community of Liechtenstadt said, he died in our community, he should go into our cemetery, and we have the schus to bury him in our neighborhood. And the other community said, what do you mean? He was the Rav of our town for the last 30 years, and he was the Av Beis Din, and he's the one who built up the whole city, and his parents and his grandparents and everybody else in his family is buried there. We should really be the ones to have the schus to take him back and bury him in our cemetery. And this was a major issue at the time, and they sent a letter to the Chasam Sofer asking him, what should be done? So the Chasam Sofer writes that I understand by now the time that I got the letter and the time that I'm responding, he's already been buried for a long time in the community where he passed away in Liechtenstadt. And now the nature of the question has changed. They want to know, can they exhume the body and move him to the city where he was the Rav for all those many, many years before he passed away on this trip, unfortunately. So the Chasam Sofer gets into the issue and he says, well, we all know that you're not allowed to be engaged in Bizayon HaMeis. You're not stam allowed to move a body from one place to another unless you're getting some sort of upgrade. You're going to Eretz Yisrael. However, the Chasam Sofer goes into a lengthy discussion to explain why he thinks that in this case it would have been permissible. He says, number one, because before he died he was sick in Liechtenstadt and he left clear instructions that he wanted to be buried in his old town. He didn't want to be buried there if he ends up dying in this community. That was number one. Number two, he said, all of his family members are buried in the other cemetery, and his wife and his children, and not his children, but his parents, his grandparents. It wouldn't make sense that he should be taken away. That's a very unusual schus to be together with family members. And therefore, he said, putting all the factors together, it would seem that we should really move him back to where he is supposed to be in the cemetery in Nicholsburg. Why do I mention the story? Because the Chasam Sofer, at the very end of the tshuva, writes, after a whole discussion to explain why he thinks it's permissible to move the body from one community to another, he then writes in the end, however, I'm a little bit concerned that if people are going to see that, there are papers on the bima, if people are going to see that we're allowing this for a Mordechai Benet, they're not going to understand all the circumstances, and they're going to learn from there that they can do this under any condition, and therefore he said, I'm concerned because of Bizayon HaMeis, and it's not permissible. So the son of the Chasam Sofer, the Ksav Sofer, Reb Shimon Sofer, was a person who was Yad Yamino of his father. He was very close to his father. And he said that he found it a little bit strange. The father writes a whole long tshuva explaining why it's mutter. And then the last line he says, but I changed my mind. I don't think it's allowed. What happened? So he said that he spoke to his father about it, and his father told him the following. He said that night he stayed up the whole night writing this tshuva. Finally, at the end of the night, he fell asleep. And when he fell asleep, he had a dream. And guess who came to him in the dream? None other than Rav Mordechai Benet, the one who was the discussion of the whole Shiloh about moving his kever. And Rav Mordechai Benet told him, you're right, I really should be allowed to be moved and they should exhume my body back to the old cemetery. However, he said, this is a punishment min hashamayim and I deserve to belong here in Liechtenstadt. You know why? Because many years ago there was a couple that got engaged. And they came to my Beis Din, they came to ask me a shaila whether or not they have a right to break the engagement. And I listened to both sides and I said, yes, I told the boy, you have a right to break the engagement. And he said, the girl suffered so much busha, so much embarrassment, because I gave the psak that he's allowed to break the engagement. He says, because of that, I'm punished. And the girl was from this city of Liechtenstadt, and I'm going to be buried together with her over here in this community, because that's where I belong, because of the psak that I gave so many years ago. Amazing. And that's why the Chasam Sofer changed his view at the end of the tshuva. That's what the Ksav Sofer said. His father told him as why he changed his mind. Yeah?
Isn't there a story about the Ksav Sofer where someone had a dream that he's going to die on a boat?
That was Reb Chaim Volozhiner. As Reb Chaim Volozhiner. And even that is a tough story to understand. Very Litvish story. But anyway, it's not Nogea to this year over here. But that's what the Ksav Sofer said in the name of his father. And he said, you see, that we take this kind of sugya very seriously. When a couple wants to break off a shidduch, it's not something that we joke around about. It's not something that is a simple ordeal. It's something that is taken with a very extreme degree of seriousness. And not only that, we have a fascinating Gemara in Maseches Tainis. So if you look over here in the first entry on the source sheet, you will find a Gemara Maseches Tainis Amar of Ami. Ein gishamim yardim ela b'shvil bale amana. The reason why we have the opportunity to enjoy the rain in our world is because we have bale amana. What does bale amana mean? People who are true to their word. People who are trustworthy. We know today, unfortunately, many people cannot be trusted. But the Gemara says that there's something very special about a person who is bale amana, who is true to their word. You promise something, you give someone your word, and you follow through. And the Gemara learns it from a pasuk. V'amar avami. Bo rei kama gedolim bale amana. Look how important it is to be trustworthy. Look how important it is to follow through on your commitment. Minayin, how do we know? Michulda ubar. What's chulda? Chulda means a weasel, and bar is a pit. What's chulda ubar? What do you see from there? So Rashi fills us in on the story, and he says, chulda ubar he misu shnei b'nei adam. A weasel and a pit killed two people. What's the story? So Rashi says, Matzihu ba'agada. Chazal tell us, Maisa b'bachar echad, there was a young man, Shenasan emunaso l'riva achas she'isa ena. A guy was traveling one fine day in the forest, comes across a nice girl, and he says, you know, maybe we should go on a date. They go on a date, and he says, maybe we'll marry each other. She says, okay, sounds like a nice idea. So he says, let's say we'll get married in 6 months from now. Sounds like a nice idea, we'll get ourselves ready, we'll find an apartment, we'll do whatever has to be done. And he sets a date for the wedding. Amra, she says, hey, slow down. Me made. Who is going to be the witness that you're really going to keep your word? You told me you want me to hang out here. You told me I shouldn't go out with anyone else. And you're committing yourself to marriage. Who's going to be there to say that you really made this commitment? He looks around. They're in the middle of the forest. There was nothing there. No people were there. He was walking in the forest. She was there. And therefore he says, the only two things I can see here are a weasel and a pit. So he says, Amar HaBachar, Bar V'chulda Eidim Medavar. You know what? He says almost as a joke, I'm going to keep my word. Come on, I told you I want to marry you. I'm attracted to you, and I think this is going to work. So the Bar will be one aid, and the Chulda will be the other aid. And these are the two Eidim to tell the world that I am going to follow through on my commitment that I made to you, that we're going to get married. Liyamim, a couple of days went by. He's taking a walk in another forest. Avar Alumunaso, V'nasa Acheres, happens to be, bumps into another girl. And he says, hey, you know, I think you're more attractive, and I think I would be more interested in marrying you than the first girl. So he just forgets about his commitment to the first one, marries the second one, Vaholid Shnei Banim. And he gives birth to two children from this woman. Echad Nafalabar, Umeis, Ve'echad Nashchasu Chulda, Umeis. One child falls into a pit, and he dies. And the second child is bitten by a rodent, is bitten by this rat, and dies. Amazing. Amrlo Ishto, his wife turns to him and says, Ma maisa huzeh shebaneinu meisim b'misa mashuneh. What's going on here? How many people do you know that have lost a child? Unfortunately, some people lose a child, but two children, and two children in such an unusual manner, one of them falls into a pit, and one of them gets bitten by a snake, by a rodent, doesn't make sense. And he says, Amrlo, kach v'kach haya ha-maisa. I know why it happened. It's because I said I was going to give my commitment, I was going to give my word to that woman, and I didn't follow through, and I said, the Chulda Ubar are going to be my two Eidim, my two witnesses, that I'm going to follow through on this promise to this woman, and I didn't do what I was supposed to do. Frightening story. But that's what Rashi quotes on the Gemara, explaining what the Gemara says in Tainus Daf Ches. An amazing story. Not only that, the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch, in Eben Ezer and Siman Nun, you look at number Beis, the Rama quotes a comment of the Mordechai, one of the Gdolei HaRishonim in Maseches Yevamos, where the Mordechai says that there is a cherem hakihilos. A cherem hakihilos means that we have put a ban on a person from being chozer b'shiduchim. If you give your word to somebody and you promise them that you're going to go ahead with the marriage, there is a cherem. Ve'ein lo heter ela b'hataras harbe anashim. Number one, he says, the only way out of it is if you have, the Mordechai says, at least 30 people got together as a bezdin, and they said, we all listen to the story, we listen to the two sides, and we think it's reasonable cause to break off the shidduch. Or number two, sheyifteru ze'ezeh. You both see that this is just not going to work, so the chasen and the kala together both make up with each other that we're going to part ways and go in our own directions. But otherwise, says the Ramah, we have imposed a cherem hakehilos. We have imposed a cherem on a person who goes ahead and breaks their commitment. And this is quoted, as we said, in Shulchan Aruch LaHalacha. The Beis Shmuel talks about it. The Achronim take it very seriously. The Nadi Yehuda and others have major discussions about this. And the Rashba and the other Rishonim try to explain why it is that we take this so seriously. And he says the reason why is because, number one, if you made a commitment and you promised something to somebody, you have to follow through on your word. That goes not only in marriage, it goes in everything. And not only that, the Rashba writes, there is so much embarrassment that comes about from a broken engagement. Everyone starts talking, maybe this happened, maybe that happened, something wrong with her, something wrong with him. And then there's also fights between the two families, and therefore the Rashba says, this is why we have taken this very, very seriously. On top of that communal cheirem that the Ramah describes here, that we have all imposed upon those who break off their commitments, not only that, we have a comment of Tosis and Bava Metzia. Look at number Dalet here. Tosis writes a comment, and the Haggadah Maimon quotes us in the name of Rashi as well. Mihu knas she'osim be'eish shiduchim. When you have a knas, what does a knas mean? We have imposed a tax on a person. We have imposed not a tax. A knas is a penalty. Thank you. On a person that is mevatel l'shiduch, says the Bali Atosis Mahali afilu lo kana bebezdin chashu. You have to pay money to the other side. When you break off a commitment to a marriage, even if you did not make the commitment to marry each other in a bezdin, usually a boy and a girl promise to marry each other, it's not in front of a bezdin, wherever it is, he proposes to her, she proposes to him, whoever loves each other more, and then they basically give each other this commitment that they plan to go ahead with the marriage, but it's not in front of anybody else. Says the Bali Atosis, it doesn't matter. Once you've taken upon yourself to marry this person, if you don't go ahead with it, he says, not only is there the cheirem that the Ramah speaks about, but the Bali Atos is right, there is also a knas. We penalize that person for breaking it as well. Now Tosa says, how can there be a penalty? I never took upon myself this obligation, so how can that be? So Tosa writes two reasons. Number one, kivin shenogim bo kol ha'olam. This is what the whole world does. You promise someone you're going to marry them, and you don't go ahead with it, you have to pay when you don't go ahead with your commitment. That's what Tosa says. Now today, we don't have such a practice. But Tosa says, it seems in his day, that was the minhag, that was the practice. And number two, Tosa says, perhaps the reason why is because, bedin hu lehischayev kalachozim bo, kiven shemavayish es chaveru. Anyone who ever learned Baba Kama, or the basics of Hilchos Nezikin, we know if you damage somebody else, you have to pay a number of different payments. You have to pay Tsar, Nezek, Ripui, Sheves, Boshas. You have to pay the doctor bills. You have to pay whatever it is that they suffered a loss because they couldn't go to work all that time. You have to pay a number of different things. One of them is Boshas. If, let's say, the person now has a black eye and they're embarrassed to walk out on the street as a result of you, you have to pay them for the embarrassment of whatever it is that you caused them to be embarrassed. And Tosis writes over here as well, perhaps the reason why we have imposed a knas on somebody who breaks off his shidduch is because not only this is the minhag, this is what everybody does in all communities, but also because it perhaps brings about such an embarrassment to the other side that you would have to pay midin boshes, which is amazing. And it shows how seriously we have to take this issue. In fact, there are some very prominent achronim, the most prominent of them all is the Vilna Gaon, who said something that's going to sound outrageous, but you'll just calm down for a minute. You'll understand in a minute why he said it. The Vilna Gaon writes, he doesn't write it, Reb Chaim Volozhiner quotes, it's a pretty credible source, that he heard from his Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon, that if somebody sees that a relationship is going sour, but the problem is that I already gave my commitment to marry this person, and now as we get to know each other a little bit better before the wedding, we realize, not really going to work out, not such a good idea, and this marriage is never going to last. The Vilna Gaon even went so far as to say it's better to get married and divorced than to break the commitment to the marriage that you made during the engagement. Sounds outrageous. Why would you do such a thing? Going to go ahead and get married and then divorced? Then the woman is a grusha, she can't marry a kohen. It doesn't make sense. So why does the Vilna Gaon say such an outrageous thing? So the answer that the Achronim say is, again, I don't think this is the general practice, but I'm just bringing it out to show you how seriously some Achronim took this concept. So the Tami Amin Hagim writes, the reason why is as follows. Look at number 8. He says, Masha Omrim Ha'olam Sheyoser Nachon Sheyizgarshu Achar HaChasana Mi Sheyizparku Atnaim. There are those who say, and the those that he's referring to is the likes of the Vilna Gaon and his peers, who said that it's better to go ahead and get married and divorced than to break a commitment when you have promised somebody to get married. That is, Hu al pi masha amru chazal b'kiddushin. It's based on what the Gemara says in Kiddushin on Daf Nun. Shechoshishin l'sivlonos. What does that mean? What's sivlonos? So we know when a couple gets engaged. So there's different minhagim what people do. So some families, I don't know, the girl gives the boy a watch, a pair of gloves, I don't know what she's going to buy him, all kinds of different things. And what does he buy her? He buys her a diamond ring, he buys her a diamond necklace, he buys her whatever, all things that are interesting to her. So the Gemara Kiddushin says, well, you got to be careful because that's called sivlonos. The gifts that we give each other at the time of the engagement, perhaps, says the Gemara, Pirish Rashi, Misha Shidach Beisha Vinisratze. If I propose to a girl and she says, yes, I'd like to marry you. Vekadam Vishilach Sivlonos Be'edim. Next thing you know, I come to the engagement party and I give her the diamond ring and it's in front of all the people who are there. So I give her something in front of others who might be Edim. Choshishin Shema Kiddushinain. Maybe that counts as a Kiddushin and now she needs a get. So you have to be very careful. You know, every 2, 3, 4 years, the same question comes from some co-ed modern Orthodox high school. It happens every few years. We keep hearing about it. That some boy thinks it's funny. In the middle of recess, he goes over to a girl and he gives her his snack and he says, do you want to marry me? And she says, of course, I love you. And you have this whole shiloh, what do you do now? Because maybe that's considered like the Kiddushin. It's a Shava Pruta, right? That's all you need to get married. So you have the shiloh. Came up in Hafter a few years ago, I heard. I don't know, I wasn't here, but somebody told me last night that it happened in Hafter. Somebody else told me at a shir, I don't know if it's true, but somebody told me it happened in New Jersey also. Whatever, you hear these stories. But it's a real thing. The Gemara says, Choshishin l'sivlonos. If you give a gift over to the other side, and she obviously accepts it, and it's being given in front of Edim, you have to be worried, maybe that's a quasi-kiddushin, and then a get would be required. And therefore, the Tami Amin Hagim writes, this is why some said, it's better to get married and divorced, this way you can actually give a get and make sure that the woman's not going to be an Eishes Ish when she goes to get married to someone else, and you don't have this problem of the sivlonos that we just mentioned. There's a... What?
What about
the relatives that are there? The relatives that are there? You're saying they'll passel the Edim that are present? What about relatives that are at every wedding?
No,
you don't exclude them. This is a new thing that we say to the exclusion of others. We don't exclude them. No, let's say at a wedding, Tosis has the kasha. Right.
In this case over here, no, it was made Edim.
Okay, so the question is, the Balei Tosis asked that question. I think the lashon that they use is, Heich matzinu yodeinu v'raglenu. Tosa says, what are we going to do? Every time you go to a wedding, there are always going to be family members who are standing around by the chuppah, and if you're going to have family members, they're going to out, whatever you call it, they're going to negate the rest of the Edim there. Why? Because they're psulim le'edus, and even if you have two very kosher Edim, if they're together with everybody else, so now it's going to be a problem. So that's the kasha Tosa says. So you're saying over here, how could it be? So if you give it with two Edim that are present, it's an issue. It can happen. It can happen. That's what he says. That's what he says. And therefore, this is why some Achronim said. There's an amazing tshuva in Rav Moshe. It's not directly related, but it's a fascinating story. Rav Moshe writes, there was a guy who was in his 40s or something, and he hadn't yet gotten married, so he hadn't been mekayim the mitzvah per Revu, and he very much wanted to get married. And he finally met a girl, and after they got engaged, she came down with some kidney issue, I don't know exactly what it was, with some very serious problem. And as a result of the dialysis or whatever it is that she was going to have to go on, he doesn't say dialysis, but it was something, they said that she wasn't going to be able to have children for 2 or 3 years after the marriage until whatever medication that was put into her system is now going to be drained out and she's going to be healthy again, which they had a complete faith that that was going to happen. She had a very simple prognosis. They thought they could take care of it, but they said it would be dangerous for her to become pregnant. So they asked the Shaila to Rav Moshe, do we have a right to use a very questionable contraceptive for the first 2, 3 years of the marriage as long as we plan to ultimately have children after 2 or 3 years? So they asked the Shaila to Rav Moshe. So he gets into a whole discussion and he says, well, We know that there is a big machlokus about this contraceptive, whatever it is that they wanted to use. And he says that it's a major discussion and it's not so simple. However, for a married couple, we would certainly allow it. If it was memakom pikuach nefesh, or it was dangerous for her to become pregnant, he said certainly we would allow it. However, he says, you're going to get involved in a story. Now you're only engaged. He says we should tell the couple to get married and then rely on this kula and maybe violate an avera every single day, really for the first 2-3 years of the marriage, when they have just as easily an option just to break off the shidduch. Says Rav Moshe, why would he do such a thing? Why would you go ahead with the shidduch and rely on a kula like this? Let him go find himself another shidduch, which I don't know why it's so simple for a 40-year-old to find another shidduch. Obviously, he's not having such an easy time. So Rav Moshe gets into this discussion. In the end, Rav Moshe has an amazing paragraph in the very end of the tshuva, and he says, this is my feeling, and I think they should break it off, because it doesn't make sense to rely on a kula. However, he says, if you, as the rabbi who sent me the question, I think it was Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt, I looked up the tshuva this morning, I think it was Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt, he says, if you know the couple well, if you get the feeling that this is going to be a sakana to the boy or the girl because they're going to be so distraught over the fact that they love each other so much and now you're going to tell them they have to break it off, and on top of that, he says, the girl is weak as is because of her illness and because of the treatment, and now you're going to tell her you also lost the chassan that you wanted to marry, he says, obviously there's nothing to talk about to break an engagement like that. You have to be very careful. So it's interesting that Rav Moshe goes through the whole discussion, mutter aser, he's not sure, and then in the end he says, bottom line, you got to look at the couple and you have to really assess the situation carefully based on the way you understand what's going on between this commitment that they made with each other. So although, as we mentioned, breaking off an engagement is something that is considered very, very severe and very serious, the Shulchan Aruch writes that obviously there are circumstances where one would have no problem breaking it off at all, and if you broke it for reasons that are given by the Shulchan Aruch itself, there would obviously be no knas, and there would be no cheirim, and there's nothing wrong at all, and nothing to be concerned about. So the Shulchan Aruch says, what if you get married, what if you get engaged, then you've never been to the girl's community, she's from out in the Midwest somewhere, you're from New York, and you finally go for Shabbos, and you show up in shul, and everybody in shul is saying, oh, you're the guy who just got engaged to that girl, did you know her father's sitting in jail, and the mother is this and a that, and do you know the brothers are this, and like there's a whole story about every family member, it just so happens to be, I never inquired, because I met the girl on my own, and now's the first time that I have the opportunity to hear from others what they say about the family. Says the Shulchan Aruch, if it's machmas shem ra, the whole community is talking about them and everybody knows the story. I happen to be the last man standing. I didn't know any of it. In that case, says the Shulchan Aruch, you have every legitimate right to break the shidduch and that would not be subject to a knas at all. Not only that, Shulchan Aruch writes, if you have machmas choli, if let's say somebody comes down with an illness, and it turns out that now this illness is going to be something that is going to impede in some way into a healthy, normal marriage. In a case like that, certainly says the Shulchan Aruch, that would not be an issue. The Shulchan Aruch then writes something that I found very surprising, and that is, if the brother of the Kala is Hamer Daso Achar HaEresin, let's say the brother of the Kala goes off the Derech, he becomes an atheist after we got engaged. I don't know, I would have said, why is that relevant to the story? In such a case, says the Mechaber, that's grounds to push off to break a marriage, to break a shidduch, and there would be no problem at all. I found that to be very surprising. I found that to be a big chiddush. But that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Of course, goes without saying, really shouldn't be said, but it's clear that if the chassan doesn't share a piece of information, or the kala doesn't share a piece of very important and relevant information that really could affect the marriage in a critical way, obviously that would certainly be a grounds to break the shidduch as well. Now, that's very subjective. Everybody has their own threshold of what they think is an important piece of information. Your mother doesn't put a white tablecloth on the table for Shabbos? Oh, come on. I should have known that before. You're laughing, but this is, you know, these are questions people ask when they call about shidduchim. So, that's a very subjective term. So, what do you mean when the Shulchan Aruch says, if there's some piece of information that I should have known that I didn't, so everybody has what they consider to be something that's important. So the Shulchan Aruch says the guideline is as follows. Kol she'eskimu alav b'nei ha'medina shehu mum she'machzirin bo mekach zeh, machzirin. If it's something that our entire community would agree is something that all of us should have known. Somebody had cancer, and now as a result, unfortunately, not everybody, but some people who have gone through treatment are unfortunately unable to have children. That's something I would imagine every member of our community would agree, as unfortunate as the circumstance is, I should have been told that before I went out with this girl. Come on, that's very unfair. So the Shulchan Aruch says, if it's a piece of information that everybody would agree is something that's relevant and something that we should have known, then everybody would agree that that's something that is worthy of, that's a worthy excuse of breaking the Shidduch. So the Beis Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkish, has an amazing discussion. It's a fascinating story. He says there was a woman who got engaged, and it happened to be she had an older sister who was already married with some children. During the period of her engagement, her older sister unfortunately died. And she left these three little Yisomim at home with her brother-in-law. And the family didn't know what to do. What's going to happen? He has three young children. He can't watch the kids. He doesn't know what to do. So he's going to go and start dating, and he's going to move to another community. But we're the grandparents, and we're the aunt, and we know how to take care of the kids. So they suggested, why don't you break off your shidduch and go marry the brother-in-law who just lost his wife? You know the little kids very well. They love their aunt. And you'll be able to take care of them better than anyone else can, so maybe you should be allowed to break the shidduch in such a case. And Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan goes into a discussion about why he thinks it would be permissible in this scenario. And he says, I'll tell you why. He says, number one, because the only problem that we have with breaking off a commitment is, number one, that you're going to embarrass the other side. He says over here, everybody knows the circumstances. Everybody knows the only reason why you're breaking it is not because I don't like the other side. It's not because I'm upset at them. It's not because I found out some negative information. He says the reason why I'm doing it is clearly because there are Yisomim here, and those are the ones that need to be taken care of. And therefore, he said in a case like that, he feels without a doubt that would be something that would not be subject to a cherem, not be subject to a knas, and there would be no issue at all. There's a fascinating discussion, which came up in one of the cases recently as well, about paying a shadchan. So what happens? You get engaged, there's an obligation to pay a shadchan. Everybody knows you have a real obligation. So Tosfos asked the Kasha, why do I have to pay a shadchan? I didn't ask them to make my shidduch. When do I have to pay you? Tosfos says, when do I have to pay a person who does a favor for me? It's when I hire a landscaper to come to my property and to do something in my house. I hire a worker man to come to the house and fix something. I have to pay them for the service because I asked them to come. A shadchan calls me up one day and wants to make a shidduch for me. I didn't ask you for the favor, so why do I have to pay? I never obligated myself. You went out of your way. It's your problem. So Tosfos discusses, where does the nature of the obligation to pay a shadchan come from? But it's clear that there's an obligation to pay a shadchan. That's not something that is disputable. And in fact, I once read in a book that the Chafetz Chaim was such a tzaddik. The Chafetz Chaim was concerned before buying the Dalet Minim on Sukkis. So he said, the Torah says it has to be shalachem. It has to really belong to you. So he said, how do I know that every penny that I have really belongs to me? Maybe in my store, I think the Chafetz Chaim's family had some supermarket or store, I don't know exactly. So Chafetz Chaim said, maybe I overcharged someone for a few rubles, a few pennies, and maybe the money's not really mine. So he said, the money that he set aside for buying the Dalet Minim every year was the money d'mei ha-shadchanis. Because he said, that is rightfully mine, and nobody can dispute the fact that that was rightfully deserving to the person who made the shidduch. So I guess the Chafetz Chaim was a good shadchan. Every year he had some money left over from the shidduchim that he made, and that's what he used to buy the Dalet Minim from, because you have to pay d'mei shadchanis. So what happens? Couple gets engaged. They have an obligation to pay the shadchanis. Doesn't always happen the day you get engaged. Whenever two families make up with each other how much they're going to give, and they split it. And that's what they, I think that's what they usually do. Each side gives half of, what? So some people do it after the wedding. I don't know. What is the common practice? I think most people do it at the engagement. No? I don't know. It's two different minhagim. So the Achronim actually talk about that also. What the minhag is. Do you give right after the engagement or do you give at the wedding? Either way, so the shaila is here. We haven't gotten around to pay the shadchan, but the shadchan really did their job. And now, the shidduch is broken. So what do we do now? So that's a big shaila in the Achronim. And the Taz, and the Beis Shmuel, and the other Achronim say, it's clear, if the shadchan did their job, you have an obligation to pay them. It's too bad. You guys decided you don't like his nose, and you don't like his beard, and you don't like the way she does her makeup, so now you wanted to break off the shidduch. That's too bad. But I did my job. I'm entitled to the salary that I invested. I invested my time, I invested my effort, my energy into getting the two of you together. I should be paid for my time and for the service that I created for you. And therefore we assume that that would be something that they have an obligation to pay. However, there's a fascinating discussion in the opposite direction. And that is, now that our shidduch has broken, does the shadchan have to bear the responsibility for all the problems that are created as a result of this horrible shidduch that they made? So you'll say, that's ridiculous. How can that be? Well, listen to the following. The Ramah quotes a psak in the name of the Trumas Hadeshin, an amazing story. The Ramah says the following. I'm not a businessman, so I don't know exactly how this works, but I would imagine it works something like the Trumas Hadeshin's description. He says there's somebody, let's say for example, who needs to buy a house. He can't get a mortgage from a bank, whatever it is, he doesn't have a line of credit. So what does he do? He asks a friend of his, I need to borrow money. I need to put down money for the house. What am I going to do? So this friend serves as an agent, serves as a middleman to find some wealthy individual in the community who has no problem lending you the money that you need to buy your house. Is that a fair enough scenario? It happens every so often in business, I assume. Not everybody always knows the investors. You go to a middleman, you go to an agent, you go to a broker, a dealer who can find somebody who's willing to invest in you. Okay. He makes the investment. This guy makes the shidduch between the borrower and the lender. And now the two of them meet. He gives them the money. You buy your house. Very nice. 5 years go by. You're supposed to pay back the loan. And you're nowhere to be found. You're not paying back. So the one who lent the money goes back to the middleman, to the broker, and he says, hey, you got me involved in a real mess here. You introduced me to this person who borrowed the money from me for 5 years. And now he's not willing to give it back to me. You have to get involved, and you have to figure this out. You have to make sure he pays me. So do I have a right to say, what do you mean? My job was just to set the two of you up. And then I took myself out of the picture. Now it's the two of you are on your own. What does that have to do with me? It's 5 years later. It's not my problem. Says the Trumas Hadeshin, as quoted the halacha in the Ramah, you have an obligation to follow through. If you made this horrible shidduch between these two people, the Malveh and the Loveh, you have to deal with all the fallout from the Shidduch also. That's the psak that the Ramah quotes in the name of the Trumas Hadeshin and Choshen Mishpah. Now that's very problematic. The Shach says, does that make any sense? The Shach quotes the Beis Yosef, he says, Devarim Megum Gamim. He says, the Trumas Hadeshin cannot be. What do I have to do with this story? I'm out of the picture. All I did was I introduced Reuven to Shimon, and now the two of them worked out the details of whatever investment they were doing with each other. Why is it now pinned on me that I have to figure out the details? Why should it bother me anymore? So the Shach says it cannot be. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, there's no machlokas here. The Trumas Hadeshin and the Ramah versus the Shach, they're talking about two different cases. Writes the Aruch HaShulchan, it depends what the nature of the broker's job is. In some deals, he said, the nature of the broker's job is not just to introduce the two parties, but to stay involved with the two parties and make sure that not only do they meet each other, but also that the terms of the deal and the conditions are written up. And therefore, by being the one who's very heavily involved past just the introductory stage, you now have an obligation 5 years down the line to work it out between them also. However, says the Aruch HaShulchan, the Shach is talking about a case where all you do is you introduce two people to each other. And now because all your job was to introduce the two people and now they're off on their own, they made the bad decision to get engaged to each other. They made the details of the deal to get married with one another that were poor details and a poor assumption and nothing worked out for them. That's their problem. It's not my mess that I have to fix. And therefore the Aruch HaShulchan writes, this would not be an issue. And based on that, many, many Achronim have said, this is really the way we have to look at a Shidduch as well. It depends what the nature of the Shadchan's role actually is. So in our community, generally what happens is, the Shadchan is involved in the beginning, introduces the two parties to each other, and then they take it from there. It's their responsibility to figure out all the details from then on, and therefore you follow what the Shach says, which is, the Shadchan doesn't bear responsibility now. I did my job, and I'm finished. Now it's your job. You're two responsible adults. You have to work it out yourselves. And if a problem comes up later on, just blame yourselves, because you're two adults who should have made a better deal with each other, who should have been more understanding of one another. And because you weren't, now you're suffering the consequence, not my problem at all. However, I'm just saying for argument's sake, I don't know that it's true, but let's say, in a Hasidic community, where they only go on one date, and I don't know if it's true, but I would imagine the job of the Shadchan is not just to set them up, but also to work out everything, all the details of the deal. What am I calling this a deal? The details of the marriage, the details of the financials, and who's doing everything, who's paying for what, and who's where they're going to live, and where they're going to everything. So then this Aruch HaShulchan is very appropriate. And that's exactly what the Ramah says. Then, perhaps the Shadchan, him or herself, bears the responsibility for the terrible union that they made here, for the terrible mess that they got everyone involved in. Because they had not just a job to introduce the two parties, but a job also to move this along and to work out all the details. Perhaps the most contentious issue whenever you deal with a broken engagement is, I hope people find this interesting, I was very interested looking into it. So, unfortunately, but it's the reality. So the perhaps one of the most difficult parts that you need to deal with is the dinei mamonos. So what happens, obviously, there are expenses that are incurred by any shidduch that breaks. Everybody put a deposit on the caterer, you put a deposit on the hall and on the band and the photographer and the gowns and the everything else. So the question is, who has to take responsibility for all of those losses? So let's see what the Rambam says. Writes the Rambam, based on a Gemara in Baba Basra, Kuf Mem Vav Amid Beis. The Rambam says in Hilchos Achiyo Matana, HaSholeach Sivlonos LeBeis Chamav. If somebody sends, it's the bottom of the page, number Vav. HaSholeach Sivlonos LeBeis Chamav. I got engaged, and I send gifts to my soon-to-be wife. Beim Rubim, Beim Uwatim. I send her a diamond ring, and I send her, it's her birthday, so I send her, I don't know, what do you send for her birthday? I'm a bad husband, I don't know. You send a new wallet, a new purse, she needs, I don't know. So, the Rambam has his own, Beim Rubim, Beim Uwatim. Every chassan sends whatever it is that he thinks is going to make his kala happy. Ben she'achol sham sudas erusim, ben she'lo achal, ben she'mesu, ben she'mesa he dies, she dies, for whatever reason, shidduch doesn't end up happening, says the Rambam, yachzivru hasivlonos kula. All of those gifts need to be returned. Why? Because it's clear, I didn't give you the diamond necklace because I want you to have a diamond necklace. I gave you the diamond necklace because the assumption is that ultimately we're going to get married, and when we get married, I'd like you to wear the necklace that I bought for you. That's clear, says the Rambam. That's the understanding. And the Rambam then says, when he gave the gift to the girl, right, which chassan comes to the girl's house for Shabbos and says, I love you so much, but I want you to know, I'm giving you a diamond necklace now only because I hope that we're going to get married. And if we don't, I hope you give it back to me, says the Rambam. What do you mean? He never made that stipulation explicitly. He's a crazy guy if he does. So why am I bound to that? The Rambam says, no. Shehadavar yadua. It's clear. You don't even have to ask him. It's an umdana demuchach. It's clear. Any chassan who's in this position who gives a diamond necklace to his soon-to-be wife, obviously he's giving it with the understanding that she's going to be his wife. He's not just giving it because he wants her to have jewelry. He's giving it because he wants to express his love, and he hopes that that will translate into something much larger. And if it doesn't, obviously his intention was that he should get it back. That's what the Rambam says here, and it's quite clear that is the halacha. So the Rashba writes, this obviously goes in the other direction as well. Let's say the girl bought the guy cufflinks and a watch and whatever he wanted. And now the shidduch breaks off, either side breaks it. So the Rashba says, it's clear that he has to give back all the gifts that he invested also. There's no doubt about that. Obviously, you have to do that. So that's what the Rishonim say with regard to all the gifts that were given back and forth. Now, what about, break it down a little further, what about the expenses that we had for all the deposits and all the issues that came up and all the gowns that we made and all the everything else, the crazy money that we spend on weddings today? So what is the halacha? So let's see. Look at the second side of the page where the Shulchan Aruch writes as follows. Look at number 10. They send each other clothing and jewelry. Somebody backs out from the shidduch, writes the mechaber, yachzir ma shesholach lo. Everybody has to return the gifts to whoever it is that they belong to. The same way that all of the diamond necklaces that he sent her go back to him, Hadri mai de shalcha ihi lididei, he has to give back everything to her as well. De umdan daitahu, because it's clear, it's obvious. Shelo shalchalo ela alda sheach nisena lechupa. It's clear, even though he didn't say it explicitly, it doesn't have to be said. It's clear that obviously what I have in mind when I give all these presents is, I want this to be yours, should we figure out how to get married ultimately. But if we don't, then obviously I want them all back. Now, says the Rambam, in addition to all of that, what about all of the expenses that were lost as a result of the commitment to marriage that was now broken? Says the Rambam as follows. Horu rabosai, shem haya minag hamadina sheyasa kol ara se'uda, v'yachol re'av o yechalek ma'os, l'shamashim u'lechazanim u'chayotzebo. So translate the Rambam into our generation. If the minag hamadina is that you make a vart or a l'chayim when you get engaged, no, isn't that what the Rambam says? And you have a caterer there, v'yachol re'av, you're going to pay money to have a caterer to feed your friends. Or, says the Rambam, Yechalek Mos L'Shamashim L'Chazanim, you hire a band or a singer to come and play music by the Vart or L'Chaim. It's exactly what the Rambam says. No? I think. So he says, and then the Achronim add in, Kigon Schar Shadchanis. Another aspect of that would be, it's normal for every couple that gets married to give money to the Shadchan, and to have a Vart, and to hire a caterer, and to do all the normal things that we do. It's not normal to go to the Bahamas when we get engaged, so that you did, if you paid that money, you're on your own, it's your problem. But if we did things that are normal for people that get engaged in our community, so then, says the Rambam, if it ends up breaking, v'chazraba, and then she breaks off the shidduch for whatever reason, mishalem es hakol, she has to pay everything. Now, we're not talking about a case like the Shulchan Aruch said where she had a right to break it off because she found out something that she didn't know. Talking about a case, she fell out of love, she's not interested. As the relationship continues to develop, she realizes it's not going to go anywhere, it doesn't make sense, and she breaks it off. Says the Rambam, Mishalem es hakol. Why shehi garma lo la'abid mamono? Because she was the cause for me to lose my money. V'chala gorim la'abid mamon chaveiro mishalem. And if you're the one to cause a loss to somebody else's money, you have an obligation to pay. And the Ravid pounces on the Rambam, he says, what are you talking about? Why would I be obligated to pay? It's true that I was the cause for you to lose the money. However, the Ravid says, look what he says as follows, a number Yud Aleph. Marv is going to be in the main shul. If the Ravid says, in this case, I don't agree with the Rambam. Eini mashve im rabosa bazeh. He says, with all due respect to you, Rambam, I don't think what you're saying is correct. Why? Because he says, shezos hagrama dome. This is only a grama. I didn't go ahead. When am I mechuyev to pay you money? When I cause you damage by going to your window, I smash the window of your house, I break the door of your car, I do something that's a tangible damage that I clearly was responsible for. But over here, it's just called a grama. It's indirect. I broke off a commitment to a shidduch. As a result of my breaking my commitment, now there's going to be fallout because of the deposit to the caterer and the deposit to the photographer and everything else. That's not something that I was directly involved with. And therefore, writes the Ravid, I don't know what the Rambam's talking about. Klal shodavar, the bottom line is, ibun mamon, shebal hamamon ose oso, afo pisha garam loze, potter, says the Ravid. If you were the one who spent the money, you put together the l'chaim, you hired the caterer, you did all those things. I didn't do it, you did it. I may be the cause of you now, in retrospect, losing all that money, but you were the one who spent the money. And therefore, says the Ravid, that's a classic case of a gram nezikin, of a gram hezek. And therefore he says, how can you tell me that I'm obligated to pay? So the Magen Mishnah tries to answer the kasha of the Ravid, how does the Rambam say such a thing? And if you look in Shulchan Aruch doesn't even quote the Ravid's opinion. Doesn't even make it. Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam, and he says, since you were clearly the cause of this damage, of this loss, you have an obligation to pay for all the losses that were incurred because of the decision that you made, because you broke your commitment. We have a very interesting concept in Choshen Mishpat. It's called Kimli. Kimli means, let's say we go to a Din Torah. We're fighting over something. I thought I made a business deal with you. It turns out there was a misunderstanding in the contract, and now we're fighting over some detail that wasn't really mentioned in the contract. Okay, so we go to a Din Torah, and we show up to the Din Torah, and the Dayan says, well, based on the Psak of the Rambam in whatever, some halacha somewhere, based on the Shulchan Aruch, it seems to me that you would be chayiv to pay all the money that you're disputing. Okay. I turn back to him and I say, excuse me, you only quoted me what the Rambam says. I know that the Rashba says otherwise. I'm a big Talmud Chacham. I know that not all the Rishonim agree. I could say, Kimli, I hold like the Rashba Shita. Don't come and tell me that the Rambam says I'm chayiv to pay. I hold like the Rashba. That's why I'm not chayiv to pay. So the Shulchan Aruch says, in very specific cases, a person has a right to say, Kimli, I hold like the other Shita, and therefore, I'm a Sephardi, I'm an Ashkenazi, I hold like the Mechaber, like the Ramah, whatever it might be. I have a right to say back to the Bezin, you can't obligate me to pay. I hold like the other opinion. So there were some wise guys here who said, well, what do you mean? The Rambam says over here that I'm a chuyiv to pay for all the damages that were incurred because of my breaking my commitment. Why can't I stand up and say, Kimli, I hold like the Ravid? And the Ravid that we just read says that what? When it's only an indirect cause of damage, I didn't go and smash the car of your, smash the window of your car. I didn't do anything directly to your property. It was an indirect loss that happened as a result of the breaking of the commitment that I was involved in. So in a case like that, the Ravid said you're Pater, the Rambam says you're Chayiv. So why can't a person stand up and say, Kimli, what do you mean? I hold like the Ravid. And the answer to that is, if the Ravid is not even quoted as an opinion in Shulchan Aruch, you know, now without Tzurah Chachma, you can find an opinion that says anything. Rabbi Asher Weiss made a comment to me a while ago, and I really have come to appreciate it more and more as time goes on. You know, there are those who say, women should get aliyahs today, right? So they found in some sifkatan Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes in the bottom of a siddur somewhere in a footnote there that a woman's allowed to get an aliyah. Okay, very nice. So you found the shita, you rely on that, and that's what they fly off to the moon with that shita. So Rabbi Asher Weiss said, what's the problem? The founder of Yaakov Emden was a big Talmud Chacham, right? He was a very well-known person. So what's the problem? He said, the problem with our generation is this, and I think it's a very beautiful way to say it. The problem with our generation is that it used to be that until you got to Rabbi Yaakov Emden's Sifkatan on the bottom of the Siddur to see that, you already had been through all of Shas with Rashi and Tosas and the Rif and the Rush. After you finished that, you finished all of Shulchan Aruch with all the Nosa Kalim. And then you finished the Tur and the Beis Yosef and everything else. And after you finished reading all the Tshuvas Achsam Sofer and all the Tshuvas of Rabbi Kiva Eger and everything else, then you came out of one dusty book on the shelf, Rabbi Yaakov Emden as a sefer, and in the bottom of the sifkatan somewhere, he says that a woman can have an aliyah, but you knew that all 150 other svarim that you learned before then said that he can't. Okay, so Rabbi Yaakov Emden made a psak that nobody else agrees with, and you realize in the context of the broader halacha that it makes no sense. But today, where that's not the way people work, today where you can just search anything and find anything, you haven't done all the research until that point. So you don't have the context, you don't have the background, you don't realize that the 150 steps it took you, it should have taken you till you got to this point of finding Rabbi Yaakov Emden's little sifkatan in the bottom of the Siddur, you don't have the context to know that that's something that is totally rejected, that is totally unacceptable. So the same thing over here. When could a person say Kimli? That's only when there's 2 days in Shulchan Aruch. And the Beis Din decided to paskin this way, I can stand up and say to them, what do you mean? The Shulchan Aruch has another opinion. I have a right to base myself on the other opinion and say, I'm not obligated to pay. But over here, where the Ravid's opinion has been totally rejected, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote it at all in this discussion. So in a case like that, you can't stand up and say, Kimli, oh, I hold like the Ravid. What do you mean hold like the Ravid? Nobody holds like the Ravid. The Ravid was a very fine one of the Rishonim, and he has a very good question on the Rambam, and we have to deal with this question. However, the Shulchan Aruch felt, even though we're dealing with this question, and the Ravid was a Gemalik Talmud Chacham, he was one of the Gedolei Rishonim, we don't paskin like him, and we don't even quote him as a Shita in Shulchan Aruch, and therefore, you don't have a right to say, Kimli, I hold like the Ravid, and I'm going to base myself off of him, that I should be able to absolve myself of that obligation. And based on that, we have a right to say that if you were the Gram, if you were the cause of the Hezek, if you were the cause of the damage to the other side, you really have an obligation to pay. But because we have this Ravid Shita, and it is a good question that he asked, there are some achronim that say we try to make a pshara. Now, people don't understand what a pshara means. Somebody called me the other day and said, oh, you know, pshara means you split 50-50. That's not what a pshara means. Pshara doesn't mean you split 50-50. Pshara means you act reasonable to both sides. So, I would think it's unreasonable to say, oh, you broke the shidduch, we're going to go back to every gas tank that we filled up on every date. We're going to go back to every easy pass, every toll that we paid for everything, every time I ever sent you flowers for Shabbos. I'm going to go back for everything and make you pay every last penny. That's ridiculous. That's unreasonable. That's what we mean when we say you should make some sort of pshara. Doesn't mean that one side is not going to end up paying 90% and the other side will pay 10%. That might be what a pshara means. But a pshara here means it's a pshara krov ledin. It means one side really has to bear the responsibility for what happened, and the other side has to be reasonable and understand that there are some losses that they're going to have to take upon themselves, even though they may not, by strict letter of the law, they may not have to, but that's what a pshara really means. One final relevant point, I know it's late, is... Oh, okay, it's late already. Okay, we'll stop here. But it's fascinating to me to see how much the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam and the Ravid and the Rashba and everyone else has to say about such a common phenomenon, about something that we're so familiar with, but all the details are discussed, like every other sugya in halacha, all the details are discussed with such alacrity, with such a careful consideration in Shulchan Aruch, to the details of everything that really we see taking place in our generation. It's exactly the same. What the Rambam describes is exactly what we see in our day, that a chassan has to pay for a vart, and he gets a band, and he gets a thing. It's all basically the same kind of relationship that was developed then is what we see developing today, and that's what the painful sugya of this that we just discussed is one that unfortunately comes up all the time, but maybe he writes them that our limud, just learning about it, should be enough to pater all those who have to go through this terrible ordeal in their lives, and it should be good enough that we should talk about it just lehalacha v'lo lemaisa. Okay? So, Mirtz Hashem.